In the 18th chapter of Matthew's Gospel, Jesus tells his disciples that the church should begin to function as a family. He says, if a brother or a sister in the faith hurts you, angers you, saddens you, or does you wrong, in any way go and talk to them about it directly, one-on-one. Makes sense. Seems almost like common sense. But I'll wager that most families, just like most churches, struggle with conflict and how to really deal with it appropriately. Instead of being families and churches that teach honesty, integrity, forbearance, and forgiveness, they often become places that either teach avoidance or to malign another person, kind of like a drive-by shooting, so to speak, where the rule is strike first and talk later. Or equally as damaging, but as prevalent among families and churches, is teaching one another to avoid one another, where the first rule is if you can't say something nice about somebody, then just don't say anything at all. And if you have a problem with somebody, keep it to yourself, because harmony, even the illusion of harmony, is the most important thing to project. More important than telling the truth, more important than your feelings, and finally, more important than even you. Unfortunately, too many Christians have confused being nice with being loving, or to quote Reinhold Niebuhr, confusing etiquette with ethics. And neither of them is love, not in the sense that Jesus was talking about it anyway. It's avoidance is what it is. And all the damages and the dangers of unresolved conflict and unconfronted sin still remain, and they still fester. That's the lesson many families teach, unfortunately, but in today's lesson, Jesus lets us know that the Christian family isn't supposed to work that way. That in the household of God, when your brother or when your sister sins against you, you must go and talk to that person. And if that doesn't work, you must go back, taking other people with you, even the whole church if need be, doing everything in your power to get your brother or sister to be back in harmony with you. You see, love and forgiveness are meant to be at the core of who we are as Christ followers. And to be honest, if we can't do this between ourselves in the church, how can we ever be agents of reconciliation in the world? How are we ever going to be something that models what others can do to get back in good graces with one another? In fact, when churches cease to be places of forgiveness, grace, and mercy, and honesty, they cease to be the church itself. So what Jesus is talking about here is very, very important. Because authentic community is hard to come by. Authentic community doesn't just happen because we all gather on Sunday mornings from all around the various corners of the globe and sit and hear God's word and then go our separate ways. No, thinking about community requires work. And it's largely not just a social function, somewhat superficial, because that's safer often, like talking about the baseball or the weather or whatever else is convenient, but not real issues that confront us and keep us up at night, so to speak. Real community, therefore, requires more meaningful, more intimate risk, and it is hard work. It is hard work. Authentic, intimate, honest, loving, and forgiving communities, and families for that matter, require work. You know, you just don't give up on families when things don't go right. Some people try and do that, but it never works. It never works. Because when you find real family, when you find real intimacy, when you find real community, it's like discovering a little bit of the kingdom of heaven where you know you are accepted for who you are, warts and all. It's like experiencing God in your very midst. So let's see what Jesus tells us to do. Let's see why he lays it out the way he does. He says, step one, go to the source of the problem. Clarify what is being said. Seek to sort it out, aim for reconciliation and not condemnation. It does matter what the motive is. If you go in with a motive of wanting to destroy the partner that you're talking to, that will come across. If you go in expressing that you want to be reconciled but you're angry, that also will communicate. This is a different approach from the all too common let's whine about it, gossip about it, complain about it, or ignore the person altogether. Anything but talking directly to them, the person that you're having the problem with, that is. Don't play, in essence, the children's game of telephone when it comes to conflict. You know how that game gets played? You get people in a circle. One person passes the phone and says something. They tell the next person to repeat it. And by the time it gets around and back to the person that originally started the conversation, it sounds like a totally different conversation altogether. Messages always get distorted when we play telephone with one another. Step two, Jesus says. If you can't resolve it between you and the other person, all right, that happens, then keep it small and work with a couple of others in the church to act as witnesses to show you and your partner how to be in the conflict, about how you're going to resolve it. It's not to bring witnesses to back up your position and defend you against them. It's about bringing people who will keep the conversation respectful, loving, and on point for both sides. The opposite of this is a strategy that is employed way too often and too easily, which is to ignore the person, pretend that they don't exist, and the unfriend option that's often used on Facebook, right? You don't like what somebody posts, you don't like what they did, you unfriend them. In the church, you can't live like that. You can't live by just unfriending people. I don't like you because of what you said, therefore I'm going to unfriend you. And the problem just seems to vanish, at least off of my computer screen. The only problem is that it really doesn't go away. The problem still exists. Time does not heal all wounds. Time just makes them kind of get smaller in the mind's eye. Now, speaking honestly and listening to one another in times of tension, well, it's not easy, is it? I mean, that's some of the hardest work you'll ever do. But speaking and listening go hand in hand. So by definition, there must be forgiveness in communication. There must be a willingness to say, I'm sorry, on both sides. As Frederick Buechner says, to accept forgiveness means to admit that you've done something wrong that needs to be forgiven. When somebody you've wronged forgives you, you're spared that dull and self-diminishing throb of a guilty conscience, and you are set free to begin again. When you forgive somebody who has wronged you, you are spared the dismal corrosion of bitterness and wounded pride that gets in the way of healing. For both parties, therefore, forgiveness means the freedom to get to begin again, a do-over, and to be at peace within your own souls. That's why forgiveness is so important, because it works. Spiritual growth and maturity require the acknowledgement of our own need to grow. It's not just my brother or my sister that's standing in the need of prayer, right? It's also me. And if we cannot make that acknowledgement, then we have no option but to attempt to avoid, get rid of, or leave the person we are having a conflict with, while all the time what we're really trying to do is get rid of the reflection they have offered us of who we truly are, both sinner and saint. That's what it means to bring witnesses. Their job is to hear both sides, because it very well may be that I am the problem and not you, or vice versa, or that we're both a bit of the problem and that we can't see it. In this approach, there's an attitude towards taking responsibility and a willingness to assume the other person is not out to get you. It's an attitude of openness, and yet there are still some restrictions around the issue. There's restrictions on how you will talk with one another. You will talk respectfully. You will talk out of a spirit of love and honesty, which means instead of having the congregation have a slugfest wide going on, we follow these rules. Less is sometimes more. But what happens, say, if after two witnesses go and they try and help these two folks work it out, that doesn't seem to work? Well, then things get really serious. Why? Because then it starts to affect the entire church. And the church becomes at risk. It's like a virus that spreads. And then what he says happens is you are to treat the offender as a Gentile or as a tax collector, which at first sounds very restrictive and exclusive, like write them off. That's how it first reads. But listen to this. Think about this. It's interesting that Matthew is the one telling this story. Who is Matthew? A tax collector, right? So Matthew is a tax collector telling us to treat others like he is treated. Might this just be another way of Jesus saying, treat people the way that Jesus treated tax collectors and sinners? What did he do with them? He sat down with them. He dined with them. He talked with them. He did not write them off. So when the church is told then treat this person as a tax collector or as a Gentile, I think what Jesus is saying is you got to work just that much harder to try and bring them back into the fold. For as Jesus says, truly I tell you, wherever you bind here on this earth, whatever you bind here will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. The key thing is to know what we want to bind and what we want to loose, because it will remain. Unresolved conflict does not go away. Sin does not wear out. It just leads us into a state of hell. Now, C.S. Lewis wrote a great book called The Great Divorce. And in it, he paints a very compelling picture of what he thinks hell looks like. And for him, hell is a very vast gray city. Lewis says a city inhabited only at the outer edges, with rows and rows and rows of empty houses all the way to the center of the city, because everyone who once lived in the center of the city has quarreled with their neighbor and moved farther away from their neighbor. They've quarreled again because this is the pattern they've developed with the neighbors they've now made on the outskirts of that city. And they've moved once again, leaving big empty streets full of empty houses behind. That, says Lewis, is how hell got to be so large. Empty at the center and inhabited only at the fringes because everybody chose distance instead of confrontation as the solution to the fight. And by confrontation, I mean just what the dictionary means when it says to bring two people face to face, to sort out what is going on between them. That's what Jesus is recommending in today's gospel lesson, I think. And it's also what most of us would do just about anything to avoid because it is so uncomfortable. The excuses run off our lips. He or she is a sinner. They're not going to listen to me anyway. Let her or him come to me. It's their fault. I wouldn't know what to say even. I feel foolish. And what's use anyhow? They're never going to change. These are the excuses that lead us into hell. They're great excuses if you don't mind living on the outskirts of hell. But for those of us who are called to be a Christian community, they just won't work. There's another way to be an alternative to putting distance between one another and those that we are in conflict with, Jesus says. And we can go to them, Jesus says, and tell them what is bothering us or what we think is wrong, because the best way to end a fight is to admit also that we might be wrong in it as well, that we have had a part to play and that we are not all right. There are certain questions to be asked, such as, am I sure I know what I'm talking about? Do I have all of the facts, or do I have some of the facts and then I filled in the blanks with assumptions that are not really helpful? Have I given the other person the benefit of the doubt along the way? How long have I known this person? To what degree have they been like this throughout their life with me? What are my motives in confronting them with my own feelings about whatever it is that they've said or done? Do I want to make them feel bad, or do I really want to make peace? Let them know that I'm hurt and why I'm hurt. What am I afraid of? Is the relationship worth the risk? Some people say no, it's not. The last question, I think, is the very important one, because the only reason to take Jesus' advice at all is to win back a friend, a relationship that's in danger of being lost. Assuming that we've made it this far, we're now ready to take that final step, which is to set a lunch date or to make a telephone call to the person or write a letter that will halt the spread of hell, as C.S. Lewis says. If this isn't something you're eager to do, don't let that stop you, because there isn't anything about wanting to do this in today's reading. There's only the command, go and do it. Our life together in this place is where we are confronted, where we are comforted, where we are attested, and where we ultimately are being redeemed by God through one another. It may not be easy to be a church family, just like it's not easy to be a real family of blood sometimes. Sometimes you get very mad at the very people you love the most, but it is the only way to be part of a family that grows closer together. It is how we know God, and it is how God comes to know us. That's what we're called to do, to confront, to make up, to forgive, and to seek reconciliation, to heal and to be healed, to throw a block party right in the smack dab middle of hell and fill the place with such laughter, such love, such affection that all of the far-flung residents out in the suburbs of hell come creeping in from those distant outposts to see what all the fuss and joy is about. Our society today is highly divided. We all know that. That's not a secret. And it does not expect the church to be free of conflict or sin. We are like everybody else, human beings who have both saint and sinner within us. But what our society and what everyone needs from the church is the church can model how sinful and conflicted people can be transformed from being fearful, angry people into people who are capable of being faithful and loving, who are trying to move beyond being sinners to being saints. And in that, we model something that is healing for the rest of society and not just for ourselves. Amen.